You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche. And today we're going to be talking about the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. And we have just a bunch of people in the studio today to talk about that institute. And they are as follows. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
All right, great. My name is Lisa Hupp. I've lived in Kodiak for 11 years, worked for the refuge since 2010, and I'm currently the outreach specialist for Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge.
My name is Carrie Eschenbacher, and I came to Kodiak in 2011 as an intern volunteer for the Wildlife Refuge and Salmon Camp, and I'm now Salmon Camp Director and Refuge Ranger, and so this is my 6th year working with Salmon Camp.
And my name is Shelley Lawson. Hello, everyone. I work with Kodiak Refuge, helping to coordinate the environmental education programs with other staff that we have for our children and youth of Kodiak, and I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Hello, my name is Anne-Marie LaRosa, and I've been the refuge manager here at Kodiak Refuge since January of 2014, and we're delighted to be here to talk with Kayla.
And while it's always awesome having you guys on, we are actually here to talk about an event that's coming up, because you guys are having an anniversary. That's correct, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we're about to celebrate a big birthday for Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge coming up actually this Friday, August 19th. This is the 75th year since the refuge was established. It was originally established by President Franklin D. Roosevelt, August 19th, 1941, to protect brown bears and their habitat and other wildlife on Kodiak Island. And we also have one other anniversary that we're celebrating this Saturday in a special community event, and I'd like Shelley to talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So we're also celebrating the 20th anniversary of Salmon Camp, a popular summer science and salmon camp program that a lot of youth have gone through. And we even have parents who've been through Salmon Camp who now have children in the program. So in addition to this being the 75th year of the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge, it's the 20th anniversary of Salmon Camp. So we're combining our anniversary parties for this event this weekend.
Okay, great. And so both of these awesome programs offer a lot to the community. And for instance, like the Visitor Center, people drop by that all the time when they're visiting town. So can you go over a little bit about what the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge is and its role in Alaska?
The Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge is actually one of over 560 national wildlife refuges in the country. And those refuges range from like a tiny postage stamp, which is, for instance, Pelican Island in Florida, to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska, which is 20 million acres. So Alaska has 16 national wildlife refuges, and we comprise over 50% of the acreage in the National Wildlife Refuge system. And within that, Kodiak is one of those 16 refuges. And those refuges provide a lot of different benefits to wildlife. In Alaska, we're blessed to have pretty pristine habitats and refuges where most of what we do is monitor and protect the wildlife on our refuges and make available opportunities for the public to enjoy wildlife-dependent recreational activities like fishing, hunting, wildlife observation, and photography. And we have here in town pretty active environmental education programs. So those are some of the benefits of national wildlife refuges, and in particular Kodiak Refuge. We get get almost 70,000 visitors a year. That's including visitors to the visitor center, but almost two-thirds of those actually visit the refuge itself, which on some days I find pretty amazing considering how difficult it is to get to the refuge from Kodiak Town. So the refuge is a place where people recreate for hunting and fishing and increasingly wildlife observation and photography. So we provide a lot of those benefits to the community. We have a number of permitted commercial guides, both for fishing, wildlife photography, and big game hunting on the refuge. And that helps, I hope, with the local economy here in Kodiak for those businesses.
Okay. And can you go over some of the areas of the island that are the refuge?
Sure. So when it was originally established, the Kodiak Refuge was proposed at almost 2 million acres. And of course, land boundaries have shifted a little bit over time, but we are at 1.9 million acres now, which is almost two-thirds of the main island of Kodiak. It's about a 10-minute, 15-minute floatplane ride to get to the refuge boundary. So it is a remote refuge. You can't access it by road. You either take a boat or a plane to get into the refuge boundary. So there's two-thirds of the main island of Kodiak, including Uganic Island. And then also more recent land that's been added to the refuge is up on a Fognak Island, and that includes the northwest corner of a Fognak up by Blue Fox Bay, and also Ban Island, which is off the west side of a Fognak.
If the refuge owns a piece of land, can other organizations get in on that land? Like Lesnoy owns some land, can other organizations put their stamp on that land?
Under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, lands were selected out of national wildlife refuges by the tribes and native corporations. And so within the boundary of Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge, there's tens of thousands of acres that are privately owned by tribes, native corporations, and individuals, native allotments. So most of the inholdings within Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge are those. There also are some private properties within the National Wildlife Refuge, mostly along the coast, because when Kodiak was first established, they left a one-mile buffer around the coast that was still open to settlement under the Homestead Act, and so people did settle along the coast. And as Lisa said, the boundaries changed over time, and that was closed to homesteading, but there still are a number of private parcels, mostly along the coast within the refuge.
And should the owner of that piece of land want to do something industrial in that land, like timber harvest, they would be allowed to?
On the private parcels, potentially. On the native corporation lands, those are subject to a clause under ANILCA called 22, I'm sorry, under ANCSA called 22G, which means those uses within those lands have to be compatible with the refuge. So industrial, the refuge is zoned under our comprehensive conservation plan as mostly essentially wild lands. So we don't have an intensive development land classification in our refuge. So I would say intensive industrial development wouldn't be compatible with the reason that the refuge was there. But we have set net sites on the refuge, both private and permitted by us. So there are a number of activities that are really compatible with the refuge.
As far as I'm aware, the refuge has a couple of buildings, the visitor center, and is there another one out by Buskin?
Our headquarters is out by the Buskin River. Okay. Right. And then we have an administrative cabin out on Karluk Lake. And of course, there are eight currently, but soon back to be nine again, visitor use cabins out there. And a couple of other administrative sites that we've acquired over time.
What is the visitor use cabin?
Sure. So those are public use cabins. They're available for rent by the public. They're scattered throughout the refuge. So depending on which area of the refuge you'd like to explore or the particular activity you're interested in, there's generally a great cabin that's available for people to go out and stay in and enjoy hiking and fishing and hunting, and it's just a really great public resource. We've grown the number of public use cabins. So for instance, in 1966, there were only three public use cabins on the refuge. And so since then, of course, we've expanded. Some cabins have gone away and some new cabins have been built. And we actually have a high school youth conservation corps program that has been helping out with a lot of cabin work this summer. Shelley, I don't know if you want to add to any of that.
Sure, yeah. Each summer we hire high school students to work with the refuge. It's the Youth Conservation Corps program, so students between the ages of 15 and 18 can be employed by the Wildlife Refuge. It's a really great program where it's basically paid internship service learning where they're actively working with the refuge on a variety of different tasks. They get to learn about different career paths that they might be interested in. And one of those is doing maintenance at our public use cabins. They're only $45 a night to rent them, wow. which is not a bad price, but it is the expenses getting there. You need to, you know, a boat ride or a float plane ride to access those, or a very long hike. Some avid hikers have hiked to the refuge, which is not very common. But yeah, so our students have had the opportunity to work at many of the cabins, cleaning them up, painting, replacing windows, and things like that. So it's great to get the teens out there, because a lot of students don't have the opportunity to take a float plane ride to get out to these sites. And it's a pretty unique opportunity that I wish that we could offer to even more people.
And a couple of our cabins are accessible by boat. The cabin at Vicota Bay is probably the closest to the community of Kodiak, and you can actually take a boat out there and get to that cabin. And then if you want to go all the way up to a fog neck, there's a beautiful cabin in a beautiful spot at Blue Fox Bay. And the rest of them are, well, a Dead
Uganic
Man Bay.
Island.
In Uganic Island. So, yeah, so some of them are available by boat if you have a boat, and then the rest of them you would have to take a float plane.
Wow. And did the kids do any work on the cabins this summer?
Yeah, we did. We did work on a couple of different cabins this summer. We were in Vicota Bay at the public use cabin there, and we also were at the cabin in Ofognak at Blue Fox Bay. And so both of those were public use cabins. And they did work at Fraser at the Dog Salmon River, where we have a little cabin where it's more administrative, where we have staff stay during the summer during the peak bear viewing times. And they did some work on that cabin, making it a little less like a shed and a little more like housing.
Is there one cabin in particular that's especially luxurious, or are they all kind of same cabin-esque kind of setup?
I think they're different. Some of them are the kit cabins that have the same look, but others, like the Dead Man Bay cabin, is quite large, and we kind of inherited that from someone else. And so that's the largest cabin, I think, that we have that's available to the public. Has a big living room area and a bedroom, which most of the cabins are one room with four bunks and a kitchen table and a counter where you could set up your cook stove. That's kind of the basic cabin style, but there's a little variation around the island.
Is there a wait list, or can people just call you up and say, hey, I want this room?
It's actually pretty easy to access. You can do it online through recreations.gov, and if you pick a date and it's not available, the whole calendar shows up and you could see what is available. So if you had flexibility, I'd say it's pretty easy to access a cabin.
I suspect at the upcoming anniversary, you're going to have a lot of people coming up to you and asking about these rooms.
That'd be great.
That'd be great.
I definitely recommend it.
And for the anniversary, where is it taking place, you mentioned?
So we would love to see the community come out and help us celebrate these two big anniversaries on Saturday, starting at 4 p.m. at the Refuge Visitor Center downtown. And we are inviting several great guest speakers to cover a lot of different topics, starting with some of the early history of the refuge and the reason for establishment. We're looking forward to hearing from Judge Roy Madsen and Larry Van Dale, who both have a great historical knowledge around that topic. We also have a special guest coming in from Fairbanks, Eric Troyer, who is the son of Will Troyer, who was a refuge manager for the Wildlife Refuge in the 1950s and 60s. Eric helped his father write a book about some of his biological research in Alaska on brown bears, including brown bear research, some of the first live trapping of brown bears for scientific research here on Kodiak. The book is called Bear Wrangler. So I think many local residents may be familiar with that. And so Eric also spent his first few summers out on Karluk Lake with his dad when he was first growing up here. So we're looking forward to hearing some stories about growing up out in the refuge and about some of his dad's biological research. And then we're also really lucky to have a long-term volunteer, Stacy Studebaker, who's done a lot of great work with the refuge. She's going to talk a little bit about some of the current work that we do, some of the projects she's been involved in. And finally, we have Cynthia Martinez coming in from Washington, D.C. She is the current chief of the National Wildlife Refuge System, and we're looking forward to hearing her thoughts on this big anniversary. So those are our guest speaker sessions from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., starting at 5 p.m. at Sargent Park, just across the street from the refuge. We'll be hosting a community barbecue, and we'll have several activities and games as part of that, some live music. So really from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., we're looking forward to hosting the community and inviting people to be part of our photo booth. We've got a lot of fun activities. We'll have some Salmon Camp games to celebrate our Salmon Camp anniversary. We'll have a couple of cakes. And we'll have some of our refuge mascots. We'll have a bear, and our Puddles, the blue goose mascot, will be helping us celebrate. So that's kind of our event in the nutshell, starting from 4 p.m. going till 7 p.m. Downtown at the Refuge Visitor Center in Sargent Park.
And what kind of live musical entertainment will there be?
Well, we're having a party. So we invited the Chitsua Marimba Band to play, and they'll be playing starting at 5 o'clock while we serve food, and then they'll take a short break and they'll play again at 6 o'clock. And dancing is absolutely encouraged. we may even have our mascots out there dancing. So this event is rain or shine. We're going to have several tents, courtesy of the Lions Club. And it's free and open to the public. So we would really love to see a lot of faces come out and help us celebrate and hear stories from people who have been out on the refuge. And absolutely, we're happy to answer questions if there's questions about public use cabins or really how people can get out and enjoy the refuge.
The bear mascot makes sense to me. What is the story behind the blue goose?
The blue goose is actually the symbol of the National Wildlife Refuge System. And so if you see a sign on any of our refuge property or refuge boundaries, it's really, it's a blue goose in flight. And so people are usually aware of, say, like Smokey the Bear, which is a mascot for the Forest Service, the National Forest Service. But Puddles is a little bit less known as a mascot. And so we're lucky to actually have a Puddles mascot coming down to join us for the party and celebrating the refuge system, because it's not just Kodiak. We are part of a larger system for conservation.
Is blue goose a type of goose, or is it just the color?
It is. But I have to admit, I can't remember which goose is also called the blue goose, but because it's not here in Alaska. And actually, the first national wildlife refuge was Pelican Island, and that was,
1903, created by
so
Teddy
in
Roosevelt.
In 2003, the refuge system celebrated its 100th anniversary. So refuges are quite old, and most of the refuges in the lower 48 were established to protect migratory birds, hence the blue goose. And so they provide both, they provide resting habitat, feeding habitat, breeding habitat for largely along the major flyways for migratory birds. So they're often a little bit different than refuges here in Alaska, which are much larger and are often there to protect a larger variety of species. Often the ones in the lower 48 might be anywhere from 1,000 to 5,000 acres in largely wetland habitat where migratory birds can stop and feed and rest and do the things that they need to do. So the blue goose is probably much more well known outside of Alaska than she is in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I had no idea about that, the origin there. Mm-hmm. And in Salmon Camp, do you have a point where you talk about migratory birds and birds in Alaska?
We have different themes we cover for Salmon Camp. Maybe we'll let Carrie talk a little bit about our Salmon Camp. So she's our Salmon Camp director. She could talk a little bit about our themes.
Yeah.
And birds, if you want to cover any of the bird topics.
I do love birds. So Salmon Camp, right now we've been having rotating themes, but we've had different directors throughout the years and different education specialists. So there's been a lot of different themes over the past 20 years that's taking place at Salmon Camp. And what we learn kind of depends on that theme and also whatever the age group is. So we do serve K through 8th grade. And so, yeah, sometimes we talk about migratory birds. This year, our theme was natural cycles. And so we learned about different cycles that occur in nature. Every year at Salmon Camp, we always learn about the salmon cycle. So it was included this year, as well as for younger kids, we did the butterfly life cycle. But for older kids, we were able to talk about carbon cycle, and that was a great way to learn about climate change. And then we also learned about the cycle of the moon and how that creates tides. And we also learned about the soil cycle and how soil is created, or one part of the soil cycle. And the last day we focused on recycling, because that's also a cycle.
Did you spend time with the kids through every camp? Each one is for a different grade, you said?
Yeah. So I'm there every session, every age. And we start first week in June, and we just ended last week. And we have 13 different sessions. So 7 are right here in town, and then 6 are in the remote rural communities around the archipelago.
Okay, and could you go over like a sample day for one of the camps? Like what kind of activities?
Yes. I should say that I have me, and then I have 3 wonderful instructors as well every summer who help, and they lead, and they're in charge of a group. And then we usually have a youth volunteer or 2. So these are youth that are going to be going into 7th grade or up to 12th grade. So they're junior high or high school age helpers, which it's amazing that there's a teenager willing to volunteer a week of their time in the summer to helping out with kids. So what we typically do is we'll have like a story and a lesson, and then we usually have some type of hands-on activity, whether that's like we're actually being the Earth's water and having to move our bodies when the moon is going past to kind of understand how tides work with the moon and the gravity of the moon. Or we might play a game where we are salmon, going through the salmon life cycle and trying to make it through. Salmon have it rough, you know. and then we usually go on some type of outing. We have field trips frequently. We've gone tide pooling. We'll go fishing. We'll go on hikes and we'll play games along the way. And it really, sometimes they're fun games that help us connect us to nature. Other times our games are educational, but we're like out there in the forest playing the games. And so it's, I think, enjoyed by everybody in a great way for the kids. You know, a lot of Kodiak kids already do a lot of cool things outside around here, but it's a great way for kids to connect and learn more about the outside setting that they're in a lot and frequently.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by the Alaskan kids I see around here. Yeah. I've gone on some Audubon hikes where you see these little kids just trotting along. Mm-hmm. Must be challenging to create a curriculum that will provide a challenge for the kids because they're so adventurous already.
Yeah, they are pretty adventurous. And, you know, it's pretty great that, like, you know, when it's raining, you really don't hear that many complaints from Kodiak kids. So it's awesome. Well, we include field trips, but the games, they love games. And the kids are always down for any type of adventure. And even if they've done it before, they usually love to do it again. And I think they learn something new each time. So maybe they have gone to we go to the Buskin Weir, and Fish and Game will show us how the weir operates. And it's also a chance for kids to realize what different jobs there are out there in conservation and stuff that's outside, like outside jobs that they can learn about as well. We kind of talk about that a little bit as well. We met up with the Ludwig Museum out doing their archaeological dig this year as well, so they got to see that. And all the kids have nature journals, and so it was kind of neat because I feel like every field trip we got to see how different scientists use their field journals, like they have field journals. That was pretty neat this summer.
Yeah, and how many years have you been working with the kids?
Yeah, so this is my 6th year. So I was a volunteer instructor, and then this is my 5th year as Salmon Camp Director.
What makes you keep coming back? What do you find most exciting about this camp?
Well, it's a great program, and I love that I get to work outside, and I think working with the kids and making a difference and seeing like their eyes light up when they understand how something works in science or out in nature is just really rewarding. And so I work with a great group of kids that come to camp, as well as we have young adults who volunteer, and then also the youth teenagers that volunteer are awesome. We have lots of repeating ones, and what's really neat is a lot of the teenage volunteers are typically previous salmon campers themselves, and they're too old to go to salmon camp. They still want to come in some aspect, and so that's so great to stay connected with them and see them grow and learn that way.
Right. And so this is the 20th anniversary mm-hmm. of salmon camp. From your knowledge, how has salmon camp changed since its origin?
I think I can't speak for going too far back what it was like. There are some things that we still have, some traditions. Carrie was talking about yesterday. You know, we have a salmon song that's a standard, and it's been going on for a long time. Families, you know, parents that were in camp remember the song. We have also had people grow up through camp and grow up through the refuge. They were salmon campers, and they were volunteers, and they were part of our high school program, and now they're seasonal employees. And one of our YCC crew leader, Annalise Zimmer, was telling me that she ran into a friend who she was in salmon camp with years ago when they were little girls, and they both just broke into song, singing the songs that they learned at camp. And, you know, there's songs that we still sing at camp, some of them. So there's some traditions that we have there that are pretty neat.
I have been around when someone broke into song, the salmon camp song. All right. I was there.
Nice. Seen it. Heard it.
Yeah. It's a real thing. People do bond over that song. I won't make you sing it, but I am tempted, but I'll let you escape this time.
We do have our curriculums that we created to rotate because so many kids come back every year. If we did the same curriculum every year, that would be kind of repetitive for the students. So that's why we've created three rotating themes. And a former camp director who previously to that was a volunteer intern at the refuge, Margot Connolly, created one of our themes. It's on water. And then Carrie created the theme, which is the natural cycles of the earth. And I created a theme that's about habitat. So each day you're focusing on a different aspect of that. And it rotates. So even if you come to camp every single year, when you're in kindergarten, maybe you'll be on the habitat theme. And then when you're in first grade, it could be the water theme. Second grade, the natural cycles theme. Then by the time you're in the next grade, it's a little more advanced. Even if you're repeating a theme, it'll be a little different.
So it looks like we have a precious 2 minutes to wrap up. So if there's anything else you want to share, yeah.
Well, Kayla, I had to find out what a blue goose is because I was a little embarrassed not to know. But and Rich McIntosh probably knows this, but a blue goose is a color form of a snow goose. Mm-hmm. And until 1983, they were thought to be two different species. But now we know where they all breed in winter and have determined that they're actually the same species with a different color morph. So technically, we have blue goose in Alaska, but I think most of our snow geese here are pretty white, the ones I've seen. And blue is probably gray, so not the blue of puddles.
Well, thanks for sharing that. So could you remind us when the anniversary is, just before we wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. So we really look forward to celebrating this Saturday, starting at 4 o'clock p.m. down at the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center with our guest speakers. I think it's going to be a great event. We're going to have some door prizes. Starting at 5 o'clock, we'll be serving a barbecue, community barbecue, lots of activities and exhibit booths. And I think it's worth talking about just hearing about Salmon Camp's volunteer involvement, that we really emphasize how important the support of the community has been for the refuge, whether it's through volunteers that help us with research or education, or partner agencies or partner nonprofits, or just the support of our local businesses in helping with salmon camp. Mm-hmm. We really can't do it without the Kodiak community. So this is really our way of hopefully celebrating with everybody who lives here and everybody who cares about Kodiak nature and wildlife. I know that it's something I never get tired of, and it's such a special place to live. So looking forward to seeing everybody downtown Refuge Visitor Center starting at 4 p.m. this Saturday. Barbecue at 5 going until 7 p.m. And we would just love to talk with you more.
All right. You've been listening to Talk of the Rock with some guests from the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for hosting us.